Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3 with Bonkers, the best music and an incredible Aldi voucher. It's Thursday the 13th of May and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we will be live shortly to Old Trafford. Manchester United expected to host Liverpool at 8:15, but there is some breaking news. Much more on that to come.
Yes, very bad luck, definitely. But the thing I'm concerned about, this was not a season where we could have become champion. It just was not. No chance. But could we have 5, 6, 7 points more exactly in this moment with exactly the situation we were in all the time? Yes. And I think we should have. But we don't. So and that's something I don't like.
Jeff Shepherd has our eye on America as a familiar name returns to the NFL.
We get so enamored with Tim Tebow, the person. We got to get to the football part of this. I don't believe you can be away from this game this long, never play in a position, and come back and say, yeah, I'm going to do this in the pros against guys that's been doing this the last 8 years that you've been out in TV and playing baseball. That's my belief. I could be wrong, and Tim has proved people wrong in his life. We'll see what happens. I just don't see it happening that way.
Plenty to chat about there. And we've also got Kilkenny's Katie Power on Camogie and Shane McGrath looking ahead to the hurling weekend.
Game on 2FM.
Damien O'Mara and Donico Callum bringing you up to Tara Stewart at 7 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you if you want to text on 51552 or you can tweet at GameOn2FM. Damien, how are we doing?
Not much about it all. I am getting fierce nostalgic for the World Cup in France in 1998 because of Jenny playing Dario G just before the news. So
it just brings you straight back there, doesn't it?
Oh man, I was just saying, you know what it is? It's not even the tournament itself. I had the computer game of that for the Nintendo PlayStation. I'm showing my age. And I swear to God, I played that game to death. I actually probably could have been convicted for offences against the disc. I had it in bits after a couple of weeks.
It's amazing, isn't it, really, that it brings you back straight away. A tune can just bring you straight back somewhere, can't it?
Oh, but like that, you know those World Cups of your childhood? They're just a much different experience than the... I will never enjoy a World Cup as much as I enjoyed, like, obviously Italia 90 and 94, but like France 98, Japan, Korea 2002, those ones when you're just a kid and you've nothing else to be doing.
Yeah, but do you know what? We're going to be so spoiled this summer with the amount of sport that we're not even going to be able to take it all in. You know, between Euros, Olympics, Championship, Lions, it's going to be wild.
Yeah, but isn't it a great complaint to have?
Absolutely, so you know? I won't. Certainly won't complain about it.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones where you have to just try and get the entire family into sport so that the kids will sit down with you and just go, you know, this is brilliant. This is, you know, let's sit down now and watch the canoe slalom from the Olympics. I know you don't know what the canoe slalom is, but you're about to learn.
Everyone's an expert on fencing by the end of it. Have you ever noticed that? Should have led with the left.
And we get insufferable, don't we? You know, you'd be going around telling people, did you know the modern pentathlon is actually the only Olympic event which was specifically invented for the Olympics? Did you know that?
The moments you need, though, isn't it? Those little, you know, the kind of nuggets. I always like listening out for an old nugget from a different sport.
Yeah. I actually, like, I was in both London and Rio, luckily, and I remember, like, that's my only real great piece of Olympic stat, is that the modern pentathlon was invented specifically for the Olympics. And you kind of have to hope that between London and Rio, the fact that you've gone on about it ad nauseum, someone has forgotten about it by the time the next one rolls around. So it sounds like you're all over it again.
Brilliant.
So I suppose if I'm working on anything to do with the Games in Rio, I have to now ditch that because I've now spoken about it at length on the 13th
Absolutely.
Of May.
At least you've given our listeners a water cooler moment for the next time they're around.
There you go.
One. Yeah, did you know the modern pentathlon?
Yeah. So basically, I'll give you the entire story very quickly. So it was de Coubertin who invented... Hang on, you'll enjoy this. De Coubertin, who invented the modern Olympics, invented the modern pentathlon. And the idea is that all the disciplines within the modern pentathlon represented all the skills that were required to be the perfect soldier.
Wow.
So, will I go through them? Am I boring you already?
If you were to change it nowadays, you would definitely need to tweet within 10 seconds. Yeah.
Well, like, you've fencing, you've swimming, you've show jumping, and then there's pistol shooting and running. So I presume if you were, you know, a soldier back in the day, you needed that. But yeah. Now, I'd agree with you, yeah. Updating your Instagram profile would probably have to go in there somewhere.
Being good on Call of Duty is another certainty.
Yeah. Yeah. But beyond that, yeah, so I'm getting all nostalgic. Dario G, I had it here. Normally I'd be in a zen-like moment of serenity in advance of the programme starting, but I had the speakers, like Spinal Tap, up to 11 to enjoy that.
Thank God for Jenny. There's some days, honestly, that's like the hometown takeover gets me going. It's like my warm-up for the show.
Did you have a playlist?
Yes, I did.
Okay, go on. So tell me what... Now, is this going to be one of these mortifyingly Spice Girls?
I used to listen to Spice Up Your Life
just before scrum practice.
No, but we would have definitely bounced it around. Plus, we would have shared music, you know, in terms of... It's actually the most important job you can get on the team bus. And I know James Ryan is in charge of it at the moment, which is a serious honour to be put in charge of music. It was Malcolm O'Kelly when I was involved with the Irish squad. And then there's just kind of moments that end up happening. I remember one tour, Monday's July, was just so popular for some reason. But... ended up being like, it got to the point where at Ronan O'Gara's wedding, like Monday's singing July, and I just saw the rugby lads going crazy. And I remember Jim Williams wouldn't leave him sing anything else. We were all like, Jimmy, he's got loads of brilliant songs. He was there, sing July again.
So I want you to pause that. I want you to think about what you used to listen to walking into Thomond Park with those ridiculously oversized headphones on you.
It was always Cranberries. It was always a Cranberry tune going into Thomond. Yeah.
That's the Cork man endearing himself to the Limerick fans.
No, not at all. You have to remember where you're from.
Yeah, fuck it. Would you go on out of that? You should hear what he says about Limerick the rest of the time.
We did get squad news today from big...
Well, do you mind if we come back to that in a couple of minutes?
Not at all.
Because we need to go to Old Trafford. So Peter Smith joins us from Old Trafford. Hiya, Peter. How are you?
Yeah, good evening to you. The Manchester air has been pierced by the sound of police helicopter propellers even, and the distinctive barking of Alsatian dogs. Mobile police vehicles and on-foot officers have been patrolling the expansive car park areas of the back of the Stretford End, where accredited personnel have had their credentials thoroughly examined. And at the opposite traditional scoreboard end of the ground stand, two adjacent temporary 10-foot steel fences. And beyond those, a huge chain of stewards and police are guarding the main thoroughfare on Sir Matt Busby Way that connects with the main A56 Stretford Road. At around 6:05, chanting could be heard from that particular area. And there are all sorts of rumours doing the rounds regarding the Liverpool team bus. Has a decoy bus set off to try and distract potential protesters? Has another bus had its tyres slashed? All sorts of confusion and conjecture at the moment. The only thing that I can say is neither team have visibly arrived at Old Trafford as yet. I know that Harry Maguire's here. I saw him at 5:15. He hobbled out of a people carrier type bus and he's still on crutches and he's still got his left ankle heavily plastered and strapped and padded. But other than that, whether or not either of these two teams are here as yet is anybody's guess. But there's not been any sign of them in terms of them being in the tunnel or coming out for a pre-match walkabout.
I'm looking at Daniel Taylor, who writes for The Athletic, formerly of The Guardian, who would be an eminently respected journalist covering the northwest of England, no more than yourself, has pictures on Twitter of certainly one of the Liverpool coaches, which has been blocked into a side street near the team hotel. And reports as well that the tyres on that bus have been slashed. So I think there were pictures, Peter, doing the rounds earlier during the week. Just aesthetically, you've mentioned there that Old Trafford looks significantly different inside than it would have done a couple of weeks ago. By all accounts, there's a considerable infrastructure has been put up outside the ground as well. But we can say with some level of certainty that there will be some kind of a move by disgruntled fans to try and cause some form of opposition or protest tonight.
Well, that's been the sad thing about it, and it's been really, really covert as well, because Manchester United and Liverpool have gone to great lengths not to tell anybody, or to keep it as quiet and as secret as possible, where the teams have been based before the game, not to try and give anything away at all. And obviously, with them saying nothing, the protesters have been equally quiet, but trying to be able to be prepared to launch problematic blocks or attacks, or call them what you want, or protests. Now, it's really, really difficult. I don't know. When I look around this vast stadium, I honestly think that perhaps they could have got the teams in really, really early this afternoon, you know, maybe put them in executive boxes or something like that. You know, I was here at sort of 4:30, and maybe if the teams had been here then, maybe they even are here, for all we know. Maybe these buses that are out there are maybe decoys. We just don't know, but it's such a strange state of affairs that for a major, major football match like this, one of the biggest on the planet, Manchester United against Liverpool, we've got all these problems. I've only sort of glanced at a picture of this team bus that's supposed to be sort of hemmed in near where the Manchester United team normally stay, in the centre of the city. But surely there would be a massive police protection around it. You would have thought there'd be vehicles around it, and not only that, police motorcycles.
Well, so I would have thought the sensible course of action would not be to bring a massive multi-seated coach that is emblazoned with Liverpool FC and whatever, like, club mottos on the side. So you would hope that some sense of sense has prevailed, that it is a decoy, or it is trying to send people off edge.
Well, possibly. I mean, the fact that when I arrived at the ground, you know, at 5 o'clock, you know, Harry Maguire, who won't play tonight, that is an absolute certainty. I might not play again in the remaining Manchester United games. If he's getting taken out of helped out of a people carrier, you know, then maybe the people carrier could bring two or three at a time in, you know, at that particular time of day. You know, the traffic can be bad in certain areas, but there are sort of back routes in the industrial parks that you can get through from if you know the way. I don't know, the police helicopter's circling above Old Trafford once again, which is not a good sign. But we still, let's not forget, it's 8:15 kickoff, so we're still 2 hours away from kickoff. So, you know, normally the sort of like pre-match buzz and the inspections of the pitch, that would normally occur an hour and a half before kickoff time. So maybe we are still a little bit early. And what do we call it? Cat and mouse, ducks and drakes. Maybe a few of those games might be continuing out and around the city centre between now and then. But I do hope that we're not talking about shameful scenes again and more disruption, because it's not good for English football. You know, it's really, in some people's eyes, it's an embarrassment, you know, that all these things are going along. You know, there's people who think, you know, if the worst thing in somebody's life is the fact that some rich American owners are running your football club, if that's the worst thing happening in your life, you can't have a bad life if that's the case. You know, if that's the worst thing that's happening to you, you know, it is a shame. I just hope the game does go ahead as normal, and it's a really good one. I hope there's goals and excitement, and it overshadows what's going on around it.
Absolutely, Peter, and people have a right to protest, and we understand that, but you do want to see it done right and fairly, and not the scenes we saw the last time. But like you're saying there, this is a really important game now. Liverpool all out for top four.
Yeah, just a final point on 11 days ago when the stadium was breached. You know, by doing that, people who sympathise with United, it lost them a lot of credibility. You know, anybody who's been into Old Trafford this season has had to go through strict COVID regulations. You've got to produce documentation, you've got to produce disclaimers, you have to have your temperature taken, you have different passes to get through, different areas of the car parks to be able to get to the ground. You know, and everybody's followed it sensibly in these very, very difficult COVID times. And for such a massive breach like that, you know, and the fact that a police officer got glassed and could have lost his eye, thankfully he didn't. You know, when it turned nasty and ugly, that's when people look upon it and say, you know, the protest lost its credibility because it's turned violent and it's turned nasty. As you were saying, peaceful, you know, people would maybe take a lot more notice and have a lot more sympathy. As regards the game, well, it's all like win for Liverpool, isn't it? They were helped last night with Chelsea's home defeat against Arsenal. But in terms of their Champions League aspirations, which would be, you'd have thought, a minimum requirement in their season, which has obviously seen them win no silverware, a win essential. You couldn't really envisage Liverpool wanting to take part in the new Europa Conference competition that's going to start next season. But it could be a reality if they weren't to get the 3 points here tonight.
Mm. Peter, we're going to chat to you again towards the end of the programme in a little over half an hour's time, just to maybe get into the nuts and bolts of the game itself and maybe any updates. But can I just ask you briefly, covering Manchester and the surrounding area as you have done for so many years, United, like, they've been accused of having rolled over against Leicester. They were going to have to, Solskjaer was going to have to rotate a squad with the fixtures that they have piling up. So he rotated against Leicester, and that in course allowed Manchester City win the league. Is that more attractive a prospect for the diehard United fans than the prospect of rotating tonight and allowing Liverpool to win at Old Trafford. This has been on my mind all afternoon.
It's the lesser of two evils. But you know what, to probably give you an official answer to that fact, I would say a defeat against Liverpool hurts far more than a defeat against Manchester City. I think for you, those of red persuasion in these parts, both of them hurt. But I think traditionally, the longest standing rivalry has been between United and Liverpool. And I think it hurt United fans seeing Liverpool win the title and the Champions League the year before more than it has done seeing Manchester City win their three titles in the last four seasons. I think that's a pretty fair answer.
Okay. So I'm right in saying that he'll play a strengthened team against Liverpool rather than let them... Anyway, we'll wait and see how it plays out. Peter, good to talk to you as always. Stay safe and hopefully we'll check in again in half an hour's time there or thereabouts. Sorry, Dunica, we had to get to Peter, so I cut you off in full flow as you were about to lamp into the teams for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've a brilliant Interpro. And look, I'll be honest with you, Damien, I wasn't all that excited about the Rainbow Cup, but I must say the Interpros have been great. We've seen some high-scoring rugby and it's been attractive to watch. Munster have made 9 changes and Connacht have made 6 to their pack alone. I think Andy Friend will surely want to firm up his pack. They've been conceding far too many tries off Mull. So looks another quality team for both sides. Matt Gallagher getting to toggle for Munster and the likes of Billy Holland and Reece Marshall. Of course, you want to see the young guys like Craig Casey and Ben Healy get their game, but it's nice as well to give guys a send-off. But the big one that everyone's quite excited about seeing is Connacht's number 8, Abraham
Papali'i.
What a player. You've seen him a bit, Damien.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
He's destructive on his carries, and there was good news as well for Leinster. Obviously, a few lines togging out with Tadhg Furlong, and Robbie Henshaw's back in the fold with the good one for me to see back in there is Caelan Doris, and Ian Henderson will captain Ulster, so it's going to be a busy night of Interpros tomorrow night.
Will Addison handed a 4-week suspension following the red card against Munster. Mid-range entry point initially of 6 weeks reduced to 4 owing to the lack of aggravating circumstances and a range of mitigating factors advanced by the player. Fair outcome?
Yeah, I think so. I just think in the current form, and look, I feel for him because when you come back into rugby from being out for a while, you travel a little bit higher. And I think, you know, I like that he was confrontational and he looked really up for it. And I think he set a good standard. Seeing himself and Rory Scannell scrapping was brilliant for me to see. You see how much he cares, but you just have to bring your tackle height down at the moment. There's no way you can travel that high, and we just need to remove it out of the game. I know he's been out for a bit, but hopefully he can come back from that with a bit more shape around his tackle, because he's exciting, isn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant, and you'd love to see him back at the best of the fullness of his health. Just before we take the break, obviously, you know, the Pro 14 organisers, it's been really difficult and it's been beyond their control, and the season hasn't panned out as they would have expected, and here we have this new format. So we've got teams have played 2 of the 5 games that they will play. You look at it, like, from an Ulster perspective, it's like win this weekend or you're gone. You're probably gone already. Connacht, likewise. That we will unfortunately drift towards a territory over the coming weeks where these games are largely dead rubbers for one of the teams involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I know this is completely selfish, but Munster are 2-0 up, so I'm not all that bothered. And they're like, yes, brilliant. Any bit of silverware will do me at the moment, Damien. But you're right. We were probably looking forward to something different. It's changing the whole time. We only found out the other 2 games over the last few days. And now there's talk that maybe there will be a northern hemisphere, a north side, and the South African teams will play against each other, which, to be fair, I just think we're probably at the point where players are nearly burnt out as well. And
yeah.
I think just getting to the end of the season, look, let's just hope for brilliant Interpros and you know, an Irish team to do well in the Rainbow Cup. I think we'd all be quite happy.
Okay, break to take. We're going stateside to chat to Shep after this.
Game on, Iron America.
Okay, time to cross the Atlantic and join our great teammate Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all today?
We're good. Shep, we were just over in Old Trafford. We were chatting to Peter Smith. Just your view on the Glazers and how they're viewed back home in America. You know, we know they're involved with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but ownership is quite different when it comes to sports. Tonight there's protesting outside Old Trafford. It's quite different over there, isn't it?
oh, well, they're rich, so they're evil, right? That's how it's supposed to work, right? Now, I mean, look, you know, I mean, look, they have spent a lot of money, you know, with Tampa, you know, the new stadium a couple of years ago, like a big pirate ship that they have in the end zone. Hey, they went out and got Tom Brady. You know, I mean, look, they're not very outspoken in the States. I mean, there are some owners in the NFL, like Jerry Jones with the Cowboys. I'm trying to think, you know, the Raiders owner, you know, the old one, Al Davis, and his son Mark now is kind of outspoken. You know, that you hear from them a whole lot more. Like, you hear more from, like, someone like Mark Cuban in the NBA than you might necessarily hear from some of these other folks. The Glazers don't really make a lot of noise in the States. I mean, they're not – you know, like out leading the charge on certain issues. Now, they may, you know, they're powerful people, obviously, and, you know, sports franchise owners, you know, I mean, look, there's only 32 of them in the whole world, and, you know, that are NFL owners. And so that just sort of kind of comes with a little bit of cachet, you know, and some power that's kind of built in there. But again, they're not, you know, they're not like out in front leading the charge on any issues over here. They're not very controversial, you know, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's probably some of the criticism from you know, over in England, that the fans feel they don't know them. But maybe that's just the way they do their business, Shep. They got their NFL schedule, and already we have some big games, including Tampa.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, to your point, I mean, obviously I think not just with the Glazers, but I mean, in general, you know, and we know the passion that you see with, you know, soccer, you know, Premier League soccer fans. And I mean, it just, it's different. And it is different, as there have been more Americans kind of buying into that league. You know, LeBron has a share of Liverpool, and, you know, the guys that owned the Red Sox, you know, I mean, and Shad Khan that owns the Jaguars also owns, God, I can never remember. I always forget the name. You know, he owns a team in the EPL as well. So, you know, there is, you know, there is a little bit of crossover there, and I just think it's, you know, just a little bit of the way things go about doing differences in the way you go about doing business. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the schedule was released yesterday, and, you know, we joke about it every year, but only the NFL makes a big deal about their schedule release. The Packers and all their Aaron Rodgers trouble are going to open up in New Orleans, the first game without Drew Brees for the Saints. Week four, we've got Tampa Bay going to New England. So Tom Brady will be going back to the Patriots to go play. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but he tweeted out a little while ago. It says it's kind of like when your high school buddies meet your college buddies. So he is already in mid-season form when it comes to Twitter, guys.
But the big story of the week, and, you know, the advice we'd all give J-Lo and Ben Affleck at the moment, is never go back. So what in the name of God is Tim Tebow doing, having enjoyed retirement and the wealth that he created over his career? Why go back? Why come out of retirement?
Well, first off, the fact that we have Bennifer back together, I mean, we should just do an entire show on that. But that's probably somebody else.
Hang on. Let's come here. We are merely a conduit for you to speak to the people of Ireland. So let's just get it out there. Are you a fan of this reconciliation between J-Lo and Ben Affleck? Do you feel a little bit sorry for A-Rod that it's all playing out in public? Or do you think it could just all be a publicity stunt, Shep?
Well, I mean, I could feel all of that, can't I? you know, it's just incredible that, I mean, right after the whole A-Rod thing, I mean, what was it, like 8 minutes that they were back together? I mean, something five. Had to be go. I mean, it. Yeah, I mean, so I just think it's fantastic, you know? I mean, look, Ben Affleck, look, he's rich. You know, he's made a bunch of great movies. I've enjoyed his work over the years. But you know what? I mean, every once in a while you see these pictures of him. He's just like drinking a beer, smoking, getting his donuts delivered at like 9 a.m. I'm like, man, he's just like every one of us, you know? He's just like all of us. And it's just – you just love to see these kids get it back together. So it'll be interesting to watch, to say the least, right? Yeah.
Tim Tebow.
The complete opposite end of the spectrum, by the way. You know, you're talking about a guy who, you know, is married. He does an unbelievable amount of charity work all over the world. He puts on a like a high school prom every year for kids with developmental and mental disabilities. I mean, he's just like one of the greatest human beings that's ever been alive. So after 6 years away from the game and 5 years playing, you know, professional baseball in the Mets organization, Tim decided, hey, I think I want to go be an NFL tight end. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are now coached by his college coach, Urban Meyer, who we've talked about how they drafted Trevor Lawrence number one overall because they were so bad last year, they're going to sign him, and he's going to go play tight end. I mean, look, he was always a very big guy, you know, for, especially even for a quarterback. He's not ever played the position. He's very athletic, but they're going to throw him into the mix. And, you know, he's from the Jacksonville area originally, and here we go. I mean, it's odd. He was out of the game for 6 years. Donners, could you imagine taking 6 years off and then trying to get back into rugby?
No chance. I couldn't even do 6 days for your trip.
Yeah, it's not like he was sitting on the couch, you know, drinking and eating potato chips for 6 years. I mean, he was in, you know, good physical shape. He was playing professional baseball in the Mets organization. And trying to work his way up through there. And he's on TV every week during football season. I mean, he's not kind of gone away from the public eye. But to just basically be signed kind of almost sight unseen after just a couple of workouts, it is very strange. But you know what? There is not anyone that just doesn't have an opinion about Tim Tebow. I mean, everybody in the world of sports knows who he is. And people either love him or hate him. And the ones that hate him, I don't really know exactly what it is. I mean, he's never played for any one of my teams, so it's not like I'm a giant fan. But, I mean, just as a human being, he's a great guy. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, though, if this sticks. I mean, it could blow up in the Jags' face. But, again, look, they won, like, one game last year. So, I mean, what are they really risking here?
Shep, how hard is it to do what he's trying to do? Moving from quarterback, where you don't take a whole lot of contact, to tight end, where I presume you're looking for as much as you possibly can.
Sure. I mean, think about, you know, some of the bigger, better tight ends that we've talked about in the last couple of years on the show. Whether you've got Gronk and, you know, Travis Kelce. You know, those are the types of players. That's the type of athlete that is required to not just, you know, excel, but like if you want to be one of the better, you know, tight ends in the league. I mean, basically, Donners, it's, you know, you some of them have speed. You're not just as fast as a wide receiver, but you're also not as big as an offensive lineman. You're kind of in this kind of like hybrid position. So you might be 6'4", 6'5", and maybe you run like a 4.5, 4.6 in the 40-yard dash, which is very fast for a dude that's going to, you know, weigh 250-something pounds. You know, I mean, you're going to be booking it. It's going to be hard. I mean, it's going to be an adjustment. The great thing about it is he's smart because he was a quarterback, and so he'll know the offense left and right. I mean, I'm sure that some of it's going to be kind of a carryover, some things that he's familiar with from his, you know, college career and the coach that's going to be there. I mean, it's not easy for anybody to stick and stay in the NFL for a long time. I mean, you know, to have any type of career. So it's going to be different than anything he's ever done before. And again, I mean, people are going to watch and people will be entertained.
Just before we finish, to switch attention to Major League Baseball. It was so much easier to say in my head than it was when it came out. A big part of the public health message over here is it's great that we're increasingly getting people vaccinated, but just remember, you can be fully vaccinated, you can still be carrying COVID-19, so be careful what you do. And the Yankees have learned that this week to quite a significant level of cost.
Yeah, they really have. They've had 7 players or coaches test positive this week, and all of them have already received the vaccination. But look, you know, these guys, it was kind of one of the things that we talked about in the world of sports in general. I mean, you know, you're traveling together, you know, you're just spending time with these people all the time. And again, baseball has not... this season is not doing the bubble. I mean, the NBA didn't even do the bubble, and the NFL's talking about, you know, full stadium capacity, you know, later on this year. And so, you know, the whole bubble aspect was kind of like just last year in the States. I mean, so these guys are traveling, you know, they're traveling all over the country. And, you know, we've spoken about this a couple times, Donners. It's different in different locations. Now, I mean, you know, you're playing these sports in pretty big cities, and New York, obviously, is one of the biggest cities in the world. So, you know, you've got all these, but you have a lot of people that you're coming into contact with, whether it's hotels and, you know, the rest of your life. And maybe they just kind of came into contact. They're all asymptomatic, but they're still testing positive for it, which means, you know, they could still spread it to other people. It's just, it is just really strange to see it really impact a team full of fully vaccinated people like this. And it's something that I think, you know, we're probably going to continue to deal with throughout the rest of the year.
You better believe it. Just before we let you go, we've a very good family friend who lives very close to Wrigley Field, who has been back to Wrigley Field as part of the very limited amount of people that have been allowed in. Where are you at with, like, percentages of capacity that you're allowed into sporting venues at the minute? You're considerably further down the road than we are, I think.
Yes, but again, Damo, it depends on the locale. You know, teams in Florida and Texas can kind of, you know, can do things with more fans in the stands than you can do in California or New York, and probably in Chicago as well, just because of the local leadership or the statewide government. I mean, you know, each governor is kind of setting the mandates, you know, for the locations. Some states are just completely wide open, which is why you're seeing, you know, we've spoken before about a lot of things being held in Florida, the Super Bowl, WrestleMania, you know, the big sporting events that we always talk about. Those were both in Florida. You know, again, you're talking about having full capacity at some NFL games. Some teams are talking about we need, you know, they want fans to show that they've been vaccinated or fully vaccinated before they'll let them come into the stands. But that's going to be kind of hard to enforce, I think. They're still trying to kind of work through how all that's going to look. But yeah, again, it just kind of depends on the locale and what the local laws are in any given place.
Shep, as always, thanks so much. We leave you to get back to your Ben Affleck donuts and hopefully catch up with you next week.
Yeah, you can say what you want about you can say what you want about Tim Tebow. He's never dressed up as Batman. To the best of our knowledge. Just a quick word on Man United. So our understanding is that the Liverpool team are on their way and the teams are on their way and everything is hunky-dory. There are pictures outside Old Trafford which are very, very ugly. And let's call a spade a spade. There are clearly people who have latched on to what is, in theory, a peaceful protest against the owners and are using it to cause a bit of difficulty, which obviously no one will condone. Gary Neville on Sky a short time ago, when you've got to put up prison walls around your ground and have hundreds and hundreds of police officers in a game where fans aren't attending, there's something that has gone badly wrong. And also on Sky tonight, giving his opinion on the fans and the relationship between the fans and the owners is a certain Mr. Keane.
They're still frustrated. I think this bit of communication they've had the last week, I don't think it's really impressed United fans that much, and rightly so, because again there's a lack of trust. Why should they believe that? And the images tonight, obviously we're hoping the game goes ahead, you know, we're coming to the game, we're sensing, listen, just as we get closer to the kickoff, you know, United fans will turn up, they're passionate. You spoke about there the money that's been taken out of the club, for, you know, they're frustrated with that, the dividends taken by directors was at 1.1 billion he said. You know, you've United fans up, you know, United fans travelling their thousands, spending money they haven't got. So all that goes into the mix. So it's certainly no quick fix. And I think United fans aren't finished with this. You know, we saw protests a couple of weeks ago, but I think there's plenty more to come. And the big worry is when we come back to start the next season, when obviously the football stadiums hopefully are open to all supporters. Imagine 70-odd thousand fans turning up at Old Trafford, frustrated with what's going on, you know.
10,000 here on Tuesday.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, when you think when it's going to be a full house here and there's fans turning up and there's still maybe that lack of trust and communication with the owners. You know, things can get a lot worse yet. Game on. GAA.
Okay, last night we got the views from outside the Camogie camps from Aoife Murray and Sinead Farrell. Thankfully, with the support of Littlewoods Ireland, we are inside the inner circle. Littlewoods are 100% committed to Camogie in our country, and we are delighted to be joined by Kilkenny star Katie Power. Katie, how are you?
Good, thanks, Donica. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, we're all excited about Littlewoods Ireland Camogie League getting underway, but it must be frustrating for you, you know, still carrying a bit of a knock and not being able to tug out this weekend.
Yeah, look, I suppose it is a bit disappointing, all right, but, you know, I'm on the right track, thankfully, and, you know, a lot of people are saying you must be very sick of looking at training, but at least, you know, I'm back on grass now and getting a bit of running sessions in, like, so it's better than standing there on crutches. But look, I knew what was coming, and you know, it's exciting to see the girls starting to play matches again. Obviously, I'd love to be out in the middle of it, but you know, hopefully another 6 to 8 weeks, you know, won't see me too far away. And you know, the summer's coming, and you know, it's an exciting week, I think, for Camogie, especially with the funding and coming out during the week as well. So yeah, like, it's an exciting week for the leagues to be starting off this weekend.
Absolutely, Katie, and there has been brilliant news this weekend and the excitement of getting back to games. But 2020 was such a hard year. I can't imagine how tough it was for you, like, being out injured during it as well and having to do all that, you know, the prehab and rehab on your own.
Look, yeah, it was a nightmare of a year, and I suppose I would be lying if I said any different. But you know, it's in the past now, and I'm just looking to keep, just to move forward from that. And I you know, realistically, it can only get better for me personally this year. But you know, like, it's lovely to be back with the girls, you know. And you know, from December till a month ago, you know, you hadn't seen anyone, and everyone was training away themselves. But I suppose being selfish, you know, I had a nice 4 or 5 months there where there was nothing going on, and I got a really good stint to rehab in myself. So I'd say I was only half a GA player within that time, but it was nice to have that period, you know, to get a good bit done, and you didn't feel like you were rushing, or you didn't feel like you're under pressure. You weren't looking at all the girls flying around the field, you know. So it was good to get that, I suppose, that little bit of a leeway in terms of that. And look, you know, it's great that everyone's back out in the field now and enjoying it. You know, the weather's coming good and the ground is hard and the balls are flying around. So, you know, it's great to be back as well.
Katie, we'll get on to maybe the funding and stuff like that in a while. But just for me, I always notice within our environment, injured players get asked to do things like you're doing now, the kind of the media side of it. But with the changes in rules, have you been afforded the opportunity to have a good look at them and maybe help your teammates out with trying to find a way to manipulate them to suit your style?
Yeah, like, I think the quick free is going to be a big one to come into play, and it's something that like a lot of teams, you know, won't be used to. I suppose the physicality, and you know, I know the hand pass goal is gone and dropping the hurl, but like, they weren't used, like, it wasn't really used a hectic amount. So I think, you know, the quick free from outside the 45 could be something that teams, you know, can definitely look at. And you know, it'll definitely speed up the games as well. But yeah, like, I got injured 6 days before championships kicked off last year, so I didn't even get to, you know, play any of the games with the new rules in place last year for the championship. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to hopefully getting out and seeing some championships this year.
But Katie, when we look at the league, and it's a relentless schedule. I know there's one team in each group has a bye each weekend, but you look at matches, you know, the 15th, the 22nd, the 29th, and then you're straight into quarterfinals potentially on the 5th and 6th of June. Is it going to be similar in, you know, people are talking about the Allianz leagues insofar as they're a springboard to shake off the cobwebs, get up to speed in terms of the new look to certain aspects of the game and hone it for championship. Is that the conversation that's going to happen around Camogie panels this week as they prepare for the opening round of games?
Yeah, look, like, there's no team, I don't think, going to be hurling out their skin. Like, everyone's only back training collectively and doing hurl sessions the last, I think, is it three or four weeks, everyone's back, allowed back now. So I think, you know, the first few games people are going, there's going to be a lot of cobwebs there. But I think it is important as well, you know, for ourselves to get a good run in the league and get as many competitive games coming into the championship. You know, championship isn't far away now, and obviously, you know, match sharpness and match fitness only comes from playing competitive games. So, you know, we've only two round, like, league round games, so, you know, you'd be hoping to get to the knockout stages to get you know, to get that match sharpness and have that competitiveness going into the championship.
Just on the relationship between the league and the championship, and obviously, you know, it's a different structured calendar for everyone this year, but I remember chatting to Brian Dowling on the steps of the Hogan Stand after the All-Ireland final in December, and the relief that you had ended a four-year drought, which, you know, those counties would kill to have 4 years between All-Ireland titles. But you look at the Camogie League success in 17-18, and then not necessarily translating that to championship success. Is that an area that you look at to improve upon, or do we just have to accept that they're two significantly different competitions and don't relate to each other all that much?
Yeah, I suppose it's actually going to be completely different this year, because like leagues previously would have been played, I think in 2019 it was played in early April, and you know, the All-Ireland then is until September. So you're playing, you know, Leinster Championship, you're playing a few games, your own club championship in between that, and then you're actually playing your All-Ireland Championship. So this year, I think, you know, you'll see maybe teams coming to farm maybe towards the end of the league and maybe translating it through to the championship then. I suppose the fact that it's so condensed now, you know, the league and the championship come so close together, I think, yeah, you'll see teams, you know, incorporating a lot more from league into championship, whereas years previous there was a nice break in between the league final and, let's say, the All-Ireland final. So, you know, you couldn't really look into it, I don't think, as much then.
So when we look at the last couple of years, and it's been yourselves, Galway, Cork, for the most part, that have contested the latter stages of the championship, or certainly All-Ireland final day, there's a far greater potential for there to be a bolter to come out of the blue, hopefully, this year.
Yeah, look, I think for sure, like, the last couple of years, teams are growing. Like, Tip have been in the semi-finals there. Last year was their fifth year in a row. And, you know, they're going to be absolutely gunning to eventually get over that All-Ireland semi-final stage. Waterford got to the quarter-finals the year previous for the first time in a long time, and they got there again this year. And Clare were in the quarter-finals this year as well, and, you know, ran Cork close up to the last maybe 10-15 minutes. So I do think that there is more teams coming to the fore, which is only going to make the game stronger, because it's going to, you know, as you say, maybe the top three or four, it's going to push them on a small bit more as well to make sure they don't rest in their laurels, you know, playing against those other teams.
Katie, just on it, you'll hope one of those teams isn't Dublin this weekend. How much focus can you put on them, or do you just look at yourselves at the moment? You know, it just, because you wouldn't have seen a whole lot of them, you know, out of a COVID year.
Yeah, look, obviously the management have, you know, things put in place for what might and might not happen against Dublin. And, you know, they have a new management in place up there, and, you know, word out the camp is they're extremely happy and things are going extremely well up there. You know, they have great players, they have great facilities, and I don't think they've got the best out of themselves in years gone by, you know, with different managements coming in and leaving after maybe a year. So they hadn't really settled up. But, like, look, we'd obviously look at maybe 5% of the opposition always do their homework on them, but like, we try to concentrate on ourselves as every other team does. And, you know, I suppose that's something that Brian and the lads brought in maybe years previous. We would have concentrated too much on what other teams were going to do, and, you know, we just probably didn't have that belief in how good we were and what we were capable of doing as well. So, you know, that's something I presume that Brian and the management are going to try to continue with this year.
Yeah, it's massively important. It is important as well, having, you know, senior figures in the room. And he lost a big one in Ann Dalton. We were chatting about it last night. Sometimes when you lose someone like that, it can feel like a massive void in the dressing room. Is there players stepping up into that space?
Yeah, look, you know, she is a massive loss, not just on the field, but off the field as well. And, you know, she's brought the group so far the last couple of years. It's incredible. And, you know, she's not just an unbelievable player, you know, she's a great friend and teammate, you know, that a lot of us have played with for the last 10-12 years. But, you know, that's life and that's sport, isn't it? You know, people come and go, and, you know, it was a fantastic way for her to go as well, you know, winning an All-Ireland and finishing with her sixth All-Star. So, look, that's an opportunity for someone else to step up, and to be honest, I think it's kind of exciting. You know, it's an opportunity for maybe some of the elder stateswomen now to step up into, I won't say her role, because I don't think you can ever replace a certain player, but, you know, to bring something different. And, you know, there's a nice bit of youth coming through there the last couple of years as well. So, you know, it's an opportunity for someone else to grab that jersey now and hold on to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie was brilliant, and we spoke about it earlier. To see the quality of funding, you must be thrilled.
Yeah, look, it was class. Anyone I was talking to, it was such great news. And, you know, like, obviously it wasn't out of the blue. You know, there's been a lot of work done for that throughout the years, but it did come out of the blue essentially on Tuesday, I think it was. And, you know, it's a great talking point. Instead of talking about the negatives maybe that were going on in previous weeks, it's so great to be able to talk about the positives. And, you know, I suppose there's a lot of people out there that didn't actually even know. I was talking to someone during the week and she said, geez, I presumed you always got the same as the lads. Like, so, you know, there was always quite a difference there, but it's fantastic to see that now we've been thought upon as equals with the lads. And, you know, it's only going to grow, you know, females in all sports, not just Gaelic games. I think, you know, we've seen so many females, you know, blowing things out of the water the last couple of months. Rachel Blackmore, Casey Taylor, you know, just to name a few. So, you know, it's definitely all positive. And, you know, it was a great week to get it as well, you know, launching the leagues. So it's great news all around.
I was intrigued by the quote from you in the press release today, and I have to admire you for your honesty. The fact that 89% of the population cannot name a camogie player is disappointing, but unfortunately, I'm not shocked. How do you think it has been a week in terms of the image of camogie? Because there's great credit is due for the fact that they've listened to the democratic process and they've listened to the membership. But critics might say, well, here's the Camogie Association again that can't get its house in order compared to the other associations. How do you assess overall the last couple of days for the sport in general?
Look, I suppose the first, when it came out first, you might have been a bit frustrated. And, you know, again, it was, you know, negativity that nobody wanted. But I do think, it was a positive side of things that, you know, they did listen to the players overall, like going back to the votes to the clubs. And, you know, I know it was a tight vote in the end, but, you know, I suppose it's easy to give out, and, you know, I don't think that's going to do any good either. And, you know, the 89%, you know, that was, you know, a stark reading, to be honest. But I do think things are improving, maybe a bit slower than other sports, but I do think things are moving in the right direction. And, you know, Littlewoods are streaming 10 National League games throughout the next 6 to 8 weeks, which is class to see. Like, and, you know, I suppose the more opportunities people get to see the Camogie or even the Camogie Leagues, you know, live, being live streamed, you know, they'll see how good the games are and how good the players are. And, you know, when they start seeing that, I suppose those figures will start to go down then.
Katie, thank you so much. Best of luck with your injury, and we look forward to seeing you back out on the pitch.
Yeah, please God. Thanks very much.
Game on. GAA. Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome back to the programme. Half-time at Villa Park. Scoreless between Aston Villa and Everton. Seamus Coleman starting on the right side of midfield, it would look. Or has played the first half on the right side of midfield for Everton. One or two very quick bits of news from earlier today that we didn't get a chance to mention earlier. Dan Martin up to ninth in general classification at the Giro. He finished third in the sixth stage of the race today. He jumped 10 places in GC, so a very impressive day for him. And a disappointment once again for Jenny Egan, the canoeist, who's missed out on qualification for the Tokyo Olympics at the World Cup event in Hungary. Missed out by a place in 2012, by a place again in 2016, and today finished eighth in the World Cup final in Hungary. Needed to finish in the top two, Dunica, to book a place in Tokyo. Heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah, that is so, so tough. Just wish her all the best and hope she can keep at it, Damien, isn't it?
Yep, that's okay. The one.
Okay, time to get back to Old Trafford and to bring us up to speed. We're delighted to be joined by Peter Smith. Peter, any further developments?
Just good news that both teams are here. United walked through the main gates around 20 minutes ago. Liverpool followed on around 12 minutes ago. So, managers here, players here, we will have a game of football. There are protests outside the ground. The yellow and green flares have been lit. There's been a march down some at Busby Way. We've not heard of any adverse news or anything like that. But the good news is Manchester United will play Liverpool at 8:15 tonight.
And the most important thing, we've not really touched on the football all that much. We fleetingly made reference earlier that this is a must-win game for Liverpool. It's effectively ball-burst game over for the Champions League if they don't get a big result tonight.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is always the most important game in the calendar for Liverpool and United fans, regardless of when it is. And such importance. No trophy for Liverpool this year. It's been a shocking defence of the title. The least they'd expect is Champions League qualification. They would not want to be playing on Thursday nights in the Europa League, and they'd want to play in the Europa Conference League, even less, I'm sure. So, really important for Liverpool to come out and win tonight.
Brilliant. Peter, thank you so much. Hopefully we have a brilliant game of soccer and all the action is on the pitch instead of outside the stadium. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Welcome as always. Thank you.
Okay, Damien, we had a jam show and that's me. You're back tomorrow night with a proper...
Yeah, you're deserting me.
Yes, you've a proper athlete tomorrow night.
I thought we'd something special here, Donica. You know? I'm only here
spoiled.
For 2 nights and you disappear for 50% of them.
Yeah, I am leaving you down. But who better to have with you? David Gillick, especially coming into the Olympics.
Yeah, there we go. And the other thing as well is we had promised Shane McGrath on the weekend's Allianz Hurling League action, but because Donica and I can't keep time properly, we're going to leave that until tomorrow night.
We did spend too much time chatting about JLO.
Game on 2FM.